Welcome to Side by Side, a podcast where I, Robert Kwong, take you inside conversations with artists, creatives, healers, and warriors taking the charge in their transformational story. Today's guest is Varsha Mathur, a certified dating and relationship coach with over 7 years of experience guiding clients worldwide to find and sustain lasting love with their ideal partners. A former practicing lawyer and mediator, Varsha draws on her personal journey, including divorce and remarriage, to help others make decisions untainted by negative influences, propelling them towards their dreams. In this conversation, we dive inside her childhood influences in relationship matters, the evolution of dating culture since the pandemic, and what to look for when starting and ending a relationship. In addition to today's conversation, I will be co-facilitating an 8-week online writer's workshop starting in January 2024 called Embracing the Multidisciplinary Writer, Lessons Across Genre and Form. We will be exploring a variety of writing disciplines and holding the space for writers to connect the dots beyond specialization. To learn more, click on the link in the show notes or visit my events page at www.robertkwonhome.com. Hi, Varsha. Thank you so much for saying yes to today's conversation. We met recently in sort of like a little incubator circle group. And I was so excited when you said yes about reaching out and connecting. And I love to get to know you a little bit more. So I know we chatted a little bit earlier today, but overall, how's life been lately?
Life has been fine. It's been very up and down as far as just social life and work life. And it's that time of year, end of the year, where there's so much happening. But I'm glad we made the time for this. And I've been enjoying our time together in the circles that we've been in, and I'm getting a lot from this connection. So I look forward to broadening it. Thank you for having me here.
And I love your focus, by the way, because you focus on relationships and intimacy and these issues that we think, I don't know, when we think of personal development and coaching, sometimes I get the sense that people like to eye roll. But it's like the more I dive into the work, I'm just like, everything's about relationships. So I just want to set the stage for that based on that is your focus and me really seeing like how important that is. And that is really vital everywhere to look at our relationship. So to start, I'm really actually curious about your origin story in some ways. And because we haven't had the chance to really deep dive in this way before. Did you grow up in the States?
I did. I was born in New York and I grew up in Maryland. So I, had immigrant parents from India, and my mom grew up in the States too. Actually, my grandparents immigrated here in the late 50s, early 60s. And so my mom and her side of the family mostly grew up in the States, but then she had an arranged marriage to my father and he came over when he was about 25, 26. Mm-hmm. And they started their life together.
Wow. So so that means you're third generation. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, legally I'm first generation American because I was the first to be born here in the States. But
understood.
I am the third generation here in the States that's been like settled and in
like
my
immigrant
family.
Kind of like yeah. We should really come up with a term for that. But no, I know exactly what
you
mean. Yeah,
some people call it like one and a half. Some people call it third. My family calls it third because my grandparents were here in their 20s. So for them, they really did. I mean, this was their culture too.
Right. So they're like, we're first. Let's be real.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And when you think about the immigrant journey, you often think about what it was like to get settled. You know, not necessarily where you were born, but where do you create and generate the rest of your life. And that's usually starts in your 20s.
No, absolutely. That's when you start like really kind of almost like initiating your own journeys because you finally have like the freedom and the ability to do that, I think, in many ways for us. So that's really interesting. I'm really curious then, being in an immigrant family and a large immigrant family, what were some of the earliest stories that you saw or maybe internalized about like relationships, love, family overall?
Well, it all kind of jumbles up into why I'm doing what I'm doing. So the lines will be blurred. But what I will share is that in the community that I came from, arranged marriages, this very traditional dynamic of gender roles, female, male gender roles, that is what I saw playing out my entire life. Like, even though a lot of my family grew up in the States, they brought a 1950s India with them when they immigrated. So the traditions and the cultures were all very, very strict. And so what I saw was a lot of women who were very quiet, except for behind the scenes, if they were allowed. And then men who kind of like played the traditional patriarchal role. And as I grew up, that's kind of just how I always saw things. And when I was married once before, I'm now divorced and remarried. But in my first marriage, when I did finally leave, and that's a whole other story that we may or may not get to, but when I did finally leave, the number of women of all ages from my background, from my family, and from my friend circle, and the friend circle of my parents, the age group of my parents, came up to me and said, I wish I had done what you did 30 years ago. Or I wish I had the guts to do what you did. And that made me realize that there were far too many, especially women, because that's what I felt closest to, of course. That's what I identify with. So I was saddened by the fact that so many people were feeling stuck and not feeling like they could come out of these very traditional roles, and then also having to deal with the stigmas and taboos associated with something like a divorce, or even something like telling your parents you don't want to marry this person, or that you do want to live a life in a certain way. So that's kind of what started this idea brewing in my head.
And it totally makes sense too. And, you know, by the way, traditional roles, some people might fit exactly for them, but I saw which is just that once you make it the status quo, a lot of people started questioning their own sense of self at the same time. So it's not to make tradition necessarily wrong either, but I hear in that there's a lot of people who's asking, well, what else is there if that's all you've seen and observed your entire life? So that totally makes sense. And then you have a background in law and mediation as well.
Yeah. So like the good Indian girl, I went to law school because, you know, medical school and engineering was not my, you know, cup of tea. And so there are very few options, right, to please your parents. And so, but I loved law. I learned so much. I'm still very glad that I have that background in the coaching business that I have.
Yeah.
And mediation and the mediation training that I did for that is incredibly useful when I work with couples. So, or even just in general, coaching is a mediation around, you know, how you're handling your life. It's been a really cool journey career-wise. I even had a medical management company for a few years, more than a few years, between coaching and law. So I've had some real transitions career-wise. But this coaching I've been doing now for over 6 years, and it feels like the right spot. I mean, it just is this beautiful way for me to run a business, which I do love. I have that entrepreneurial spirit, but also connect with people around something that's super meaningful.
Yeah, and super deep and personal in many ways, right? Which is really where you get so much value in the coaching work that we do. But also having the background in law and mediation, I'm sure that's useful because I'm curious, your experience in those fields, what insights did you get about like human relationships, if any?
Well, transactions, that's a great question. I mean, I think the age that I was at when I was a lawyer was so young. So for me, what I remember most about what I remember most was just my nerves around it, you know, getting trained, really focusing on how to be the best. But in hindsight, I can definitely say that the power plays that exist between humans because of money, because of, you know, the position in life, that comes out in the legal world so much, right? Because who's the plaintiff? Who's the defendant? Who's got the upper hand in any particular situation? That can be really exhausting for people. And I see that play out everywhere, but I definitely saw that there.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think there's like a gamesmanship to dating sometimes that people apply to. Like there are rules, it's a game, there are strategies, and you have to strategize as a lawyer. But it's interesting that you're sort of saying that there is kind of like a maybe some downsides to that, you know, potentially in looking at things in that way. And that's very interesting too.
Yes, because I don't believe that there are strategies or games to be played in love, right? I mean, you're nodding because you know you're in a similar line of work. And so this belief that there's any one way to live is so much harder to hold on to when you're when you've been coached and you're trained as a coach and you see something that's so much full of seeing a life that's full of possibilities.
So this is a broad question, but in your work and working with couples and individuals, when you see people start to repeat relationship patterns or kind of like relationship outcomes in dating and whatnot, what are some things that have come up as far as why that may be and what is causing that?
Yeah. So, you know, not to tread too much in the therapy realm, because I do have clients that work with therapists in conjunction. I mean, what I've noticed and what I've seen in myself and in others is, you know, the relationship to your parents and how that ends up playing a role in your relationship to your partner. The examples that were set for you are often what we, from our automatic, tend to repeat. Also, past relationships, being a little bit jaded from what you've experienced and then bringing that back. And not just because you think everyone's the same or anything like that, but because there's so much defense. There are so many defenses that come up when you're dating that inevitably you will repeat the wall that goes up. You will repeat the shutting people down and not wanting to move beyond a certain point because you're just protecting yourself. And so oftentimes we have to look at what do you need to kind of get in coaching terms, like complete on, what do you want to move forward from in order to stop those patterns? But more importantly, what's the healing that needs to happen before you can actually move on from that? And unfortunately, also because of stigmas and taboos, this idea that something emotional needs to be addressed is kind of scary, especially in the South Asian community. This is what I'm noticing. I know it is in many communities, the stigma around dealing with your emotions. And so there is a big difference between saying, oh yeah, I see that I have this pattern. Oh yeah, it's because of my parents or it's because of my hurt or it's because of my past. So let me get over that. And too often I see clients like jumping right over the emotional stuff and saying, okay, got it, check. Let me move on from this and fix it. Right. But instead to actually stay with it and see what else there could be for you. That's the sweet spot, in my opinion.
Right. As opposed to needing the next relationship to fix what went wrong. Yeah, that's interesting. To take some time in between for yourself to be like,
or to think that you need fixing at all.
Correct. Yeah.
The next relationship, you know, that, right, exactly.
So when you're looking at dating and working with couples, what do you encourage couples or individuals to like think about or consider before a bigger commitment like engagement, marriage, starting a family? You know, these are big decisions that come up eventually, perhaps, as a result of dating. But what are some things that you sort of want people to ask for themselves so they can answer?
Yeah. So the answer that most people want from me is to be like, oh, check this off financially, check this off health-wise, check this off in family background. But at the end of those, the day when you, it's kind of two to threefold. One is intuitively, how connected are you to your experience with this person? What do you think about the experience with this person? Are you enjoying it? Do you love them? You know, what is your gut telling you outside of all the circumstantial noise that's happening? If your gut is saying one thing, you know, are you willing to trust it? And are you willing to trust it year after year, hardship after hardship, when you actually commit to this person? So that's intuitive. And then the other piece is just sheer love. You know, is there a level of connection with this person that is going to override any other thing in your life? Like, for example, often somebody will come to me and say, well, I can only marry someone who lives in my town because I can't leave my parents and my best friends and my jobs. Mm-hmm. But what you will also find on the other end of that spectrum is that when you're totally in love and willing to commit to somebody, a job and your past is such a small piece. And you're often so willing to be there for someone that moving is not a big deal, or the other person doesn't make a big deal about moving for you. And so is there that level of love? And it kind of all ties together around intuition and understanding of one another. But if that level of confidence and partnership is not there, there's no way to know that the future is going to be concrete.
Right. And maybe there's more cultivation that's needed for the two people, which is perfectly fine. Yeah.
Yeah. And right. So cultivating it together, or cultivating it for yourself to know that, hey, I can trust my decisions. I can mess up and it'll be okay. You know, in hindsight, do I see that I could have absolutely made that first marriage work? Yeah. As a coach today, absolutely. There was room there. There was room there. Despite a lot of hurt and bad things that had happened, there was possibility there. And so with that said, you know, I can now in hindsight see the gaps in confidence, intuition, partnership, and all of those things.
And it's not an either or black and white answer, that you're willing to leave space for exploration, uncertainty, and for things to change perhaps with time. Exactly. Yeah, thank you for broadening that perspective about dating. Sometimes it can be a very like yes or no, right? It's like life
exactly.
and death.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, what I'm talking about is not just for long-term relationships once you're in a serious committed partnership. It can also be even in that first date, even in that first text, you know, how can you use your intuition, your confidence internally, and build partnership with that person almost immediately in order to have that deeper level of connection? And too often it's like, oh, what should I text? I don't know. Is this cute? Is this flirty? Am I being too flirty? You know, am I just going to get some inappropriate text back? There's so much of that uncertainty that we're losing sight of what the heart is saying and what the gut is saying.
Do you feel like because of the pandemic, the quarantine that we all experienced, the so many things becoming more virtual like this, how do you think that's influenced people's relationship to dating and how they navigate dating? Like, what have you observed, if anything?
Honestly, this is going to sound kind of funny, but I think it actually helped that people slowed down and they were required to have intellectual and emotional connections virtually and by phone before jumping to a coffee date and physically judging somebody on their first impression and their appearance. It made people like really just take the time because they had no choice, right? Quarantine and then meet someone, or talk and have video dates. And what's interesting about video dates is that you're in the comfort of your own home. So no matter how nervous you are, you can turn off the camera, you can be in comfortable clothes, you know, you can do what you need to set the space. And I think the pandemic sort of forced everyone into that. Mm-hmm. I think more so than the pandemic, the idea of online dating, which I do recommend is a great way to meet people, it has caused this numbers game to be a little bit problematic in dating.
Yeah, right. Like the gamification, it's like... Mm-hmm. hitting certain metrics almost, but these are human relationships, right? That's so interesting. Yeah.
Well, and there's now research that the apps are using the same algorithms as video games to keep people on the app. So all the dings and the hearts and the, you know, like match, and then the whole screen changes, right? And then it shows the picture of you and that person. It just makes you want to have that matching experience again, rather than actually saying, hey, I need to connect with this person offline.
Well, I'm glad to hear your perspective about dating apps and online dating, because I was going to ask you, are you for or against them, particularly for women? But I actually think this is kind of a much more holistic and hopeful perspective about dating, in that there are opportunities that we can find now that maybe were overlooked before. And maybe mm-hmm. some people experience challenges in other ways. But thank you for bringing up that there are sort of like two sides to the same coin, that there's also possibility in slowing down. Yeah.
Slowing down is huge. And online dating, again, most of my clients are very busy, very, you know, motivated in all the areas of their life. And so online dating is this great place to meet people. But if your approach is that just swiping and connecting with people via chat is enough, or is the equivalent of actually dating, then you're just going to keep playing in that cycle, not really getting
there. Yeah. And I want to flip the narrative a little bit, because you brought up, you know, you've experienced a divorce before, and many of us have to figure out the part of the relationship, maybe when you have to end things, or maybe you have to separate. So I'm curious about your insights around like ending a relationship or maybe shifting a relationship. How can we approach this topic with perhaps, I guess, some compassion, thoughtfulness, maybe a little bit of courage? But overall, I'm just curious about your take on how we can approach that conversation, which also can influence the dating conversation, right?
Yeah. First of all, getting support is so critical. And I think no matter what stage of potentially a breakup or a divorce or whatever you're going through, you're at, getting support from the different kinds of support that are out there is so important. So for example, you know, from a coach or a therapist or a mentor where it's very high level support, that's always a good call. But then there's also the friends. And the interesting thing about friends is that they will also throw in their very biased opinions. And that's where you have to be a little bit careful. So what I often say is, you know, be willing to tell your friends what you need, and do the work that you need to figure out, like, if I'm talking to a family member or a friend, you know, how can I get supported from them intentionally, rather than just going to them and crying and venting and then just getting from them whatever it is that they're going to spew out. Because not everyone's an expert in how to take care of you. So taking care of yourself. And then the second piece is going to get the support. That's kind of the way I see it.
Yeah. Thank you for pointing that out, because even in coaching, we often find that, you know, we want accountability, right? And people, of course, organically think maybe spouse, parents, people you live in the same house with, your family, maybe your best friend. But oftentimes that can kind of offload some of the pressure onto a relationship that cannot hold that amount of expectation in many ways. So I think getting support of all kinds is so important, because you don't want one relationship to be at the crux of every decision making in many ways. And for dating, sometimes it's nice to get like an objective third party perspective for that reason, because they don't have an agenda, they don't have a narrative already built in. And that's something I've kind of spoken about with clients and potential clients, which is that sometimes it's good not to put all that pressure on that relationship when it's serving you in other ways.
Right. And that's such a great point, especially because I like to use the word soulmate. Everybody assumes that soulmates means just your romantic partner, you know, but there's a lot of ways to find connections with people that will support you throughout your life in all different ways that isn't necessarily romantic support or romantic connection support. It can be a friend or a parent or a mentor. And similarly, when you are breaking up and you are having those conversations with your significant other, you know, to look at, you know, what do I need in order to not just be a good communicator of those needs to my partner, but to also then be able to really listen to that other person and be available to them so that I'm not just being jaded, biased, closed off, whatever it is.
And thinking of all these stories that we have that can make us jaded or biased and looking ahead to the future, is there like a narrative or like narratives that you'd like to see retire about women and dating, or women or dating?
Yeah, so many. And not just women, men too. Sure. I think gender roles, number one, like just those traditional gender roles, have really taken everybody for a loop. Because, well, it's interesting because I also do a lot of work in like the feminine energy.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, because that theory is in the duality of feminine and masculine, it sometimes is a little bit too confusing for someone to be like, hey, well, you're saying feminine, masculine, but then you're also saying don't go into traditional gender norms. And I'm kind of thinking from the perspective of like clients and coming into it, it can be a little bit confusing, but to think about how everyone has masculine, feminine, and for that to be something that is embraced would be great, you know, for men, women, or any gender, non-gender identifying, you know, just to be able to say, this is where I'm at in my flow of energy. I would love to see that happen. I also would love for women to no longer be categorized as, oh, that's me when I'm at work and I'm a powerhouse, or that's me when I'm home and I'm humble and submissive towards my partner, or that's me when I'm a loving mother, because I can only be certain ways with certain categories of my life. And I see that a lot. And that's often in conflict, because then it almost feels like women have to turn themselves on or turn themselves off in different parts of their life. And that can be exhausting.
Men do it too. Exhausting. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of almost like a form of masking, you know, if you've heard that term. And it's like, it can be so draining because you're spending all that energy trying to perform, right? Or trying to fulfill that role, which is a word that's come up before, versus whatever the need may be or the dynamic between the two people. Mm-hmm. Okay, I know a little bit of trivia that I'm really fascinated by about you. I read somewhere that you visited 5 continents, 27 countries, and 31 US states. And maybe that number has shifted, but are you a traveler? It appears you are. And I'm just curious about like any travel stories you have.
Oh, wow. I went to Antarctica this year. Yes.
Holy cow.
Yeah. It was the most incredible thing ever.
Just for fun or?
Just for fun. Yeah. Because my husband and I are travelers. We travel with friends and family, and it's just something that was not, it was on my bucket list for some day, but it wasn't even really high on my list because I'm not a cold weather kind of person. And it's even in their summer, it's 30 degrees Fahrenheit. So some family members were like, hey, we're going to go. Do you want to go with us? And we were like, of course. We're not going to miss that opportunity to go to Antarctica with friends and family. You know, everyone kind of, you know, someday we would have gone. So we were like, why not this year? And it's beautiful. It's, oh gosh, there's so many things I can talk about here in regard to relationships as well, because on our way there, my husband got kind of mugged, and I'm laughing about it now, but it was a very scary experience. His phone was stolen from him in the middle of like a busy area, and it traumatized us a little bit in the moment. But I'm so proud of the way that we handled it, because he's also been through coaching, training through AC as well. And
I didn't know that in the last
few years, our relationship has become so interesting. It hasn't changed per se, but now we have this language to use with one another that drops us right into the deep stuff. So the way we handled this very, really difficult situation where we didn't have a phone, we weren't getting service on my phone. We had to figure out how to get back to our hotel. Like, we were pretty much lost. And then he was without a phone for the 10 days that we were in Antarctica, which means no news, no playing on your phone, like just not having your device.
Yeah.
And it was kind of, and so in an effort to be a team player, we both decided that we would just use our phones for my phone for just, you know, basic communication only, and take the opportunity to detach from our device.
Yeah.
And we made it more about that than the mugging, which, you know, it took a lot of work to get there, but I'm really proud of the fact that we did that. And I think that's going to be go down in history as just as meaningful as a trip to Antarctica and all the beauty that we saw there and all that.
I mean, all I'm saying is, if you want to measure a relationship, travel, travel together, then you will know what kind of relationship that is.
Totally. We did a couple of, before I was even 100% sure about him, poor guy, I gave him a hard, hard time when we were dating, because I had been through a lot, you know, and I hadn't been trained as coach yet. So I really didn't know what I was doing, but I gave him a hard time. But we did take a couple of international trips together, and that taught us a lot about just emotions, how we deal with things, money, you know, all the things that you want to talk about kind of have to come up when you're traveling.
Because you bring up your identity being South Asian and dating, and that's perfectly understood that some people navigate both things at the same time. Mm-hmm. How do you recommend people navigate basically cultural differences and trying to have conversations around sensitive topics about each other if you don't automatically have that kind of like, hey, we grew up the same background, this is shorthand. Mm-hmm. And, you know, especially now because we're all virtual a little bit more, it's a little bit easier to connect with people that you weren't able to connect with before. So I feel mm-hmm. like there's more possibility there, but you're also encountering a lot of differences and right. things that you need to understand. So I'm curious about your perspective on that.
Yeah. You know, it's such a good topic. This comes up a lot in my work because interracial, intercultural relationships are very normal nowadays.
Yep.
And yet they are so challenging when you have to confront society, family. And I think that's what you're pointing to.
Yeah.
So what comes up a lot is this idea that instead of treating it as, you know, we're going to fight it, we're going to be together, we're going to handle it, it'll be fine, to actually embrace the fact that it's not going to be fine. Everyone's going to make mistakes. You, your partner, and the people that you encounter are going to say things that are potentially racist, that are wrong, that are confusing, that are just unknown to you. You just don't know. And to be willing as partners to say, hey, despite that, we're going to be willing to come back into conversation with one another and address this, not call each other out in a bad way, but be willing to point out these differences and the rights and wrongs that we feel in our heart so that we can confront it and so that we can feel like we are a team when we're confronted with it from the outside as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So in coaching work, does that shift the coaching, the way that coaching is experienced? And this is a little bit abstract, but, mm-hmm. you know, and this is coming from, I've worked with people of very different backgrounds and I've noticed, you know, in approaching that, I'm approaching it a little bit differently. And so this is a little bit maybe insider baseball, but I'm just curious in your work, it's almost like, does that affect the work?
Yeah. So I think technically the short answer is that it does not affect the work because at the end of the day, humans are humans. Mm-hmm. And so the kind of coaching, the kind of defenses that come up, no matter what your background or your, you know, how you identify in any aspect, sexual, cultural, whatever, at the end of the day, we're not different. And so the coaching, at least on my end, is the same.
Right.
However, I feel like, yeah, people do identify with the coach, maybe perhaps more if they feel comfortable with the cultural background of the coach, or if they feel like your coach can understand the stigmas related to interracial marriage or something like that. Similarly, you know, I've coached some people in the LGBTQ plus community. Mm-hmm. And then I've also had a lot of pushback there, like, hey, you don't know what our culture is, you don't know what our relationships look like and what the stigmas are. And that's totally fine, right? Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. of course I don't know everything. Mm-hmm. However, I coach the human, you right. know, and so I don't see that necessarily affecting it. Does that answer your question, though? I'm not sure if I...
Yeah, it does, because I think this is the first time I've been able to bring it up so directly. It's almost like, you know, culture and kind of what we see as personal development work. Sometimes mm-hmm. I felt like there's like struggle to see them side by side almost and make that be mm-hmm. okay. And one thing I noticed is that you're just very comfortable being like, this is who I am. By the way, I'm South Asian, come from a large family. And also this is the work I do. And so mm-hmm. I think in some ways that really resonated with me, because sometimes I guess before I used to try to almost like have a, whatever my version of a neutral way of approaching coaching. And nowadays I realize, but I am who I am, and people are mm-hmm. going to receive me based on my identity. And mm-hmm. maybe I am making that a little bit uncomfortable. And maybe that doesn't need to be the case. So when you say coaching to the human, some of it was about me doing work around how culture affects me in some ways. This is like not to deny it, mm-hmm. but also you're coaching the human. You know, it's like both and, I guess.
Yeah. And it actually took me until very recently to really embrace how much I was loud about the fact that I'm a South Asian coach. Because I grew up in the States, where most of my life, I was embarrassed to have the culture that I had, quite frankly. Like, it's only until maybe the last 10 years or so that being a South Asian, specifically Indian, is like cool. You know, it's like, oh, there's a culture out there that's being more embraced in mainstream American culture. And so therefore, mm-hmm. I don't need to hide it. Like, I had to go to the airport recently in Indian clothes. If I had to do that as a child in my teens or my 20s, I would be mortified, right? Because of all the things that I just grew up with, right? I went to school where it was only like me, my sister, and like two other Indian families, you know? So I kept it in and I hid it for so long. But now I know that like the reason that I'm doing the work that I'm doing is because of the struggles that were very much related to my upbringing. And if I don't voice that and I don't show people that it's normal to disrupt that, then I'm doing a disservice to like my audience and to my own heart. And that stuff's important to me.
And again, how much of that influences relationships, right? So how could you not address that component mm-hmm. and try to normalize it at least as a thing that we should look at. Mm-hmm. And one thing I saw you've talked about recently is like getting fun back in dating, meeting people. And it, you know, it doesn't have to be dating, meeting people, mm-hmm. making connections. Yeah. Do you have any suggestions and ideas? And also follow up, what's the most fun date you've had?
Ooh, most fun date. Oh man. Oh man, I haven't answered that in a long time, so I don't know if I can even recall.
I mean, Antarctica is like, yeah, up there. Maybe I that mean, mishap.
Honestly,
time,
but. Okay. So most recently, me personally dating, my husband and I don't agree on any of the TV that we like to watch. So recently, I don't even remember what we were watching, but we were watching it together. And me, my husband, a pizza and TV night is like so fun. Because we're always busy or we go out or we're not having the same evening schedule. So like to be able to do that with him is epic. What about you? Gosh, I haven't asked you any questions. I should ask you some.
Well, I mean, that is the purpose here. So thank you for being so open. But okay, so I would say my favorite date was my partner was a horse girl growing up, but never got to actually be a horse girl, meaning monetarily. So one thing I did one year for our anniversary was I ordered the horse-drawn carriage through Central Park. You know, they pick you up at like Columbus Circle. And it's very like, it kind of is touristy, but I was like, I don't care. And I thought one of the funniest, like probably kind of silly to many people that I thought was just hilarious is we were riding the carriage through Central Park and we were playing like Pokemon on our phone because we could like ride. And it was just so dorky and funny and specific to us. And I kind of loved it. And it was sort of like one of those things that it's one of those dates that you, that we can always reference back to. And that's kind of nice. So I'll pick that one.
Cool. I've never done that in Central Park, but, or in New York at all. That sounds really exciting.
It is exciting. And depending on the time, possibly cold. So think plan ahead, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think I could do it in the winter because I don't like shared blankets. So I would just be grossed out by the blankets they give you. That would be the only thing on my mind the whole time. I would be like, how dirty is this blanket?
But actually, like most of the time, me and my partner were like the be at home, be able to relax, be comfortable, and put something on in the background and like kind of like the evenings you're describing, because that's, despite all the hardships of the past few years, is one of those things that we were able to cultivate so hard and not take it for granted because we were always busy. We lived in different states for a while. And then we just had like the privilege of just like lounging for an evening. And you know what I mean? And so I just want to reflect that back to you that I was like, this is, you know, when we weren't so busy, this is what I wanted to do, mm-hmm. right? But we were just busy.
So. Yeah, and it's so interesting that, yeah, we have gone around the world, but when we're home together, whether it's like playing a random silly game or watching something on TV, like it's really special. And that's another reason why I do the work I do, is that I want people to believe that that kind of partnership is available to them. It's out there. It exists. It's real. And I want people to know that if you want that, not everyone's meant to be in a relationship, and that's cool too. But if you want it, you should have the real thing.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much, Varsha. Okay. So I'm definitely going to hyperlink, you know, your contact in the show notes and everything. But for listeners, what's the best way to get in touch with you? Where can they find you? And things like that.
Yeah. Go to my Instagram at Coaching by Varsha and send me a DM or use the little link in there to schedule a free discovery session. That's always the best place to start. I love to kind of see where you're at before we start working together and get a feel for, you know, what the needs are.
Perfect. Well, I hope people definitely take a listen and find some help and support and partnership in this whole life. So thank you so much for your time, Varsha. I really appreciate
it. Thank you.